Welcome to episode 189 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Okay, so a little bit late this week. I've spent most of the last week working on the website for the workshop. Basically, I've spent a lot of time putting together a new website, new look. Gone white rather than black because I think in snow, winter. It's a nice clean page, I think. So basically, what you'll need to do though, I mean, today, because I've spent all of this time working on the new website, I haven't had a chance to put together a transcript or anything or put together a podcast for this week. So I'm basically going to go through all of the details of the 2010 workshops and photography tours. There's going to be something new, as I mentioned. We're going to be bringing in the Snow Monkeys for 2010. And also, there's an extra day in the Hokkaido tour in the wildlife leg. We've got various packages and things. So, you know, there's a lot to talk about. And we're just going to jump right in, and I'm going to go through all of the main points. If you've got a computer with you, you know, then take a look at mbpworkshops.com website as we speak, and it'll probably make things easier. But yeah, let's just jump right into it, and we'll see what's going to happen in the 2010 Martin Bailey Photography Workshops and Photography Tours. So the main thing, as I say, is that next year we're going to be going to Nagano, which is a prefecture that is sort of northwest of Tokyo. It's about a four-hour drive probably on the bus, and we're going to be going over to a place called Shibu Onsen, and then there's a little drive up the side of I'm going to say mountain. It's more like the valley wall. And we go into a place called Jigokudani, and that means basically Hell Valley. There's not really a lot hellish about it, but the name comes from the fact that, you know, there are volcanic vents and things in there that heat the water, and so there was steam coming out, and so it got this pretty scary name. But it's actually just a normal sort of valley. You know, so basically there we have the macaque monkeys, or, you know, the monkeys that have become affectionately known as the snow monkeys. And we looked at those a few episodes ago. I was there in a reconnaissance trip in February after coming back from this year's workshop. And, you know, decided that a lot of people were asking for it. I decided it was time to add that to the trip. But there are a number of things, other changes as well. The other main thing is that the Hokkaido winter workshop as well it's gone from 9 days to 10 days. And the main reason for that is because, you know, I do take the feedback very seriously that I get from people that join the trips. And people generally want a little bit more time to photograph the red crown cranes. And that's understandable. They're a beautiful creature. So, you know, I'm only too happy to add that. But there's so much else that we do during the trip that I wasn't prepared to drop anything else. And so it's basically meant that we'll have another day. But the good thing there is that it also means we'll have an extra morning, an extra chance to get the mist on the river from the bridge. And that's a highlight. It was the most beautiful part in some ways of the 2008 tour, and we didn't get it in the 2009 tour. And so, you know, the problem there is that, you know, only having one morning, it's you've only got one chance. With two mornings, obviously we'll have double the chances, but you know, as I've said in the past, there's nothing is guaranteed. I was there for five mornings in a row at the end of December 2006, and I didn't get the mist any days. So, you know, never anything guaranteed when we're working with Mother Nature, but, you know, the just having an extra day there will give us another chance. So let's sort of, you know, that's the main changes, and there's actually a number of packages that will allow you to sort of mix and match and, you know, select which parts of the tours you want to go on. What I'm going to do is I've made the snow monkeys at the start of the trip, basically because snow monkeys are wildlife, and then the first half, or that's actually the first two thirds of the Hokkaido trip, is also concentrating mainly on wildlife with the Japanese cranes, hooper swans, Stella's sea eagles, white-tailed eagles, and the Ezo deer and foxes. So, you know, basically, if we do the snow monkeys first and then go on to Hokkaido, the people that are only really interested in the wildlife aspect can then drop out at the end of the Hokkaido tour. The first leg of the Hokkaido tour. And if someone, you know, people are also interested in landscapes, then that's exactly what the last part of the Hokkaido tour is. So you can go for the full thing. Or you can, you know, if you're not so interested in the snow monkeys, then you can just go for Hokkaido. And basically, you know, compared to last year, I've just increased the options. There's a slight benefit of joining more than one. I'll go into a little bit of detail later, but there are packages that will allow you to mix and match, as well as just like go for individual. Say, you know, you could just go for the snow monkeys, the wildlife leg of Hokkaido, or the landscape leg, or any combination. The only thing that I would say is wouldn't really make sense would be to go for the first and the last without the middle one. But, you know, if people say someone that lives in Japan or they want to do something else in between, I'm open to that as well. But, you know, it wouldn't seem to make that much sense to me. So let me just, you know, I'm going to be going, looking down the page, clicking around with the mouse and that, and looking down the new page that I've put together to show people the details. Actually, if you're at a computer, it would be good if you could go to mbpworkshops.com right now, and then we can look together. A little sort of side note here, I've totally redesigned the website this year. I'd bought the Design Suite Premium CS4 when it came out, and I basically have been looking forward to getting in sort of sticking my hands in deep with the some of the applications in there, and one of them that I've been wanting to try was Dreamweaver. And I've got to tell you that the learning curve is pretty steep now. I used to use this sort of web design program in the past, and I think I actually even used Dreamweaver for a while, but it was a long time ago, a good 10 years or so ago, and things have changed a lot. And so a lot of the effort that I've put in over the 3 or 4 days that I was redesigning the site, especially in the first day, was more about getting to grips with the Dreamweaver CS4 product rather than the actual effort of putting the site together. But there is a new look. I've gone for white this time instead of black. A lot of my websites are black, slightly off black actually. But they, you know, because it's a winter wildlife, or like I often say, the winter wildlife wonderland or winter wonderland workshop. I've gone with the white because of the snow aspect. But, you know, you'll see it in there. It's a relatively clean looking site. There's a lot of information. So what I would say is that, you know, when you look at the main details, there are also some areas that it says click to view details, and you have to actually, you know, click to view the details. But then there'll be some, like, you know, that section will open up and you can look at the details within there. But I've put the really, really important stuff right there on the top level, so you don't have to click to see everything. So anyway, you know, as we go down, I'll just note that there are a bunch of albums that are linked to thumbnails along the right side of the page. And in there, if you go in, you can see some representative images of each of the type of wildlife, or at the bottom there's landscape that we'll see on the tour. So you can click through those and take a look. There's also a bunch of testimonials on the right side from people who've visited tours, the 2008 and 2009 tour. You know, I may be updating these again, but for now, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, five, six testimonials down the right side there. So you can take a look at those. I won't read them out today or anything, but you know, if you are interested, take a look at what people are saying about the tours. Very kindly, I should say. During the tour, we've, you know, most of the instruction as such, I've started to really call it a tour and workshop, because, you know, a lot of it is about actually, you know, the tour itself and going to a lot of locations where we have either beautiful landscapes or the wildlife. And so, you know, the thing is, I've found over the first two workshops that we don't get a lot of time in the field for like structured instruction. And the main reason for that is just because there's always something to shoot. And so, you know, my plan from the start was to do a lot of the sort of the prep work for each location, either on the bus or once we're actually in the tour, you know, on the previous evening over dinner. I'll explain a lot about what we'll see and then the difficulties of shooting at any particular location. And then I'll sort of prepare people with the knowledge or at least the basics for what they'll need before we even get there. And then as we start to photograph, I'll basically walk amongst the group. People are often sort of spread out a little bit, and I'll just be sort of asking if anyone needs any help. I'll maybe ask to see what they're shooting, and if I can see something with the images on the LCD, I'll maybe offer a bit of advice. But generally, you know, I am active in sort of in the way I work with people, but it's not really sort of like, okay, listen up, everybody, let's talk about this. For, you know, not very often. It's generally sort of, you know, we get into conversations in the field, but a lot of the time there's so much to shoot that people really just want to be right onto that. And then just getting little sort of nuggets of advice as we go along. One of the main things that I do is really try to sort of make sure that people understand that I'm available. And so, you know, people often sort of give me a shout and I'll, you know, they'll ask any questions about a certain thing and I'll help with everything as much as I can. And then sort of, you know, really make it an on-demand thing as well. Obviously, I mean, I do shoot at the same time, mainly because A, you know, I want to try and grab some of the stuff for myself as well. But the priority is always on helping the participants to get the best shots that they can. And I will always sort of forfeit a chance to make that happen. Luckily, when stuff is happening, people are generally sort of well into their own shooting and really don't need me to sort of stand there next to them telling them how to do it. But there are sort of these little off times all through the day. And so I'm always available. And like, as I say, I will walk amongst the group and make sure that I give everyone a chance to ask questions. There's the other reason that I do shoot as well is because I find that, you know, it's very helpful for people to understand what I'm doing, you know, my thought processes. That's part of the value that I'm adding. And so what I'll do is I'll be there and I'll be setting things up and I'll be constantly calling out to the group that, you know, we need, you know, this, if you're set to ISO 100 and your aperture is f5.6, then you want to be at about, you know, a 500th of a second or 1,000th of a second exposure, you know, shutter speed. And so, you know, I'll generally be calling these things out all the time. And what I'm doing really by shooting it as well as, you know, bagging myself a few shots is keeping myself in the zone and making sure that I'm fully aware of what needs to be done to get the best shots. So, you know, it's not all sort of selfish, sort of, you know, Martin trying to grab himself some images. But then, you know, like I say, between locations, I usually spend anything from a few minutes to sort of 10 minutes, 20 minutes or so, explaining exactly what we're going to see when we get there, and then we'll discuss techniques that you want to know, and generally sort of get the team ready for you know, for the location, and then we'll go over that when we get there. There are places where, you know, the you know, conditions willing, will do certain things like panning. Will definitely, if we've got, say, the swans at the lake, which wasn't so good in 2009 but was great in 2008, what we'll do is we'll actually stop and try as a group. And it's good because there's not usually that many people around where we go to shoot the swans. But we'll try as a group to sort of do some practice in the panning movement, you know, how to stand, and really sort of work on the technique. But again, this all depends on the location and what we have when we get there. And I'll also have gone through this on the bus as well before we get there. So we generally play it by ear. Other things that I'll go into are, in fact, let me just, there's a little thing that I think the fifth pull down underneath where it says details is what will I learn? And so, you know, basically I'll go through that here. We're talking a lot of, you know, the main thing is using manual mode, especially for the cranes and the eagles. And a lot of the time people don't really realize why they need that, but you know, after doing this for two years now, 2008, 2009, people generally by the end of the first day have got a good understanding of why they need it. And by the end of the second day, they're sold on the fact that that manual is the only way to go. Now, I won't force people to shoot manual. And if you really can't understand why, then, you know, you obviously any of the participants can go ahead and shoot how they are comfortable with. And, you know, I'd rather them do that and get something that they're comfortable with. But, you know, the thing is, shooting in aperture priority mode or shutter priority mode with the conditions that we're in will result in a lot of bad shots. So, you know, I really want to try and talk people into using manual, at least for these specific shoots. And then if it just doesn't work, then obviously people will be able to go back to how they would like to shoot anyway. We'll talk about, once we, especially, you know, with the birds and things, you've got to think about your depth of field a little bit. And also with the landscape work, we'll talk a little bit about hyperfocal distance and, you know, why it's useful, what it is, why it's useful, things like that. We'll try and get into stuff like the optimal focal length to be using and, you know, editing the scene in camera. There are effective shooting techniques that you can use with post-processing of panorama stitching in mind, for landscape work mainly. But, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit. As I said, panning techniques to track the cranes, swans and eagles, things, and, you know, the flying, you know, birds. And, you know, we'll also talk a little bit about focusing techniques, as, you know, that's something that, you know, it can be tricky. There are things that you can do to make things, you know, a little bit more easy for yourself, and also to really, really get things sharp. So we'll talk about that. And then there's stabilization techniques for telephoto lenses, and also some long exposure techniques that we'll get into with, you know, some of the darker, like early morning shoots and the landscape work. And then also, you know, really one of the main things is to stay, how to stay safe and shoot, still get your shots in extreme weather conditions. You know, there are things that you have to keep in mind for yourself and for your gear, both from, you know, a safety aspect and just to get good shots. And also, you know, one of the other things is that I've not really made a point of this in the past, but you do get a lot of exposure to the Japanese culture and the history. I'll often sort of, I'm not a historian, but I do know a little bit about certain aspects. And what I'll do is as we're going through the tour, I'll do a bit of a tour guidey thing sometimes and just tell people a little bit about where we're going from, not just from the photography side, but, you know, in a general sort of, as you know, the why it's named a certain thing and things like that. But, you know, we do spend in Hokkaido, for example, we spend 10 nights for the full tour. It'll be 10 nights. And all of the hotels are, you know, they range from very good to excellent. And the, you know, some of the small port towns, the hotels are not brilliant, but they're all good. But then many of the hotels that we stop in are very, very nice places. And so we get a lot of nice traditional Japanese food. Some of them have like a big banquet hall. One of them's even got a Viking boat in the middle of the hall. And that's basically, well, partly because the Japanese word for a buffet is Viking. They say it's a Viking meal, and that's because of the big banquet sort of thing. And it means that you can just go up and grab what you want. So they have this big Viking boat in there. But, you know, all of the hotels are nice. Most of them have hot spring baths or spas. And so, you know, they're pretty much, even, I think I say on the page, here it is, that even, you know, they'll please the most discerning traveler. And they really do. You know, they're very, very nice places. So, you know, you do get a lot of exposure to food and that, you know, and the people in the hotels often will talk to us about various things. Sometimes there'll be someone in the hotel that speaks English and can speak directly with the team. Other times I'm translating and stuff, but generally we have a nice sort of Japan experience as well as photographic. So, you know, the next thing that I wanted to go into is the itinerary. Let me just open this up. So this is one of those things that is a collapsible pane on the page. It's a long table, so I didn't want to sort of make the page too long with that. So, but if you look into the details section, there's an itinerary section there. Click to view details, and then what you'll see is a quick sort of rundown of where we'll go on which days. And I'll go through that briefly now. So the Snow Monkeys tour starts on Thursday, January the 28th, and we'll meet at 8 a.m., and then we'll basically take a four-hour drive or so over to Nagano, assuming that the bus, that, you know, that the roads are not too blocked or there's no accidents and things. And I mean, heaven forbid, not with us. I'm talking about the, you know, with someone else. And then, because generally what happens in Japan is if there's an accident on one of the highways, then the police come and block the road off until they've got all of the evidence to find out who to blame for everything. And it means usually that the whole road is stopped for a number of hours. So we want to make sure that doesn't happen. But there is a little bit of an insurance policy here, and which I'll explain. So if we get there on time, and we'll, you know, which will be sort of noonish, then we will spend the afternoon in the Monkey Park, and that means that, you know, we'll be there. It gives us, the good thing about this is it gives you a maybe 2 to 3 hours. It won't be a, you know, a full afternoon, because the monkeys actually go and do their own thing after about 3-4 p.m. But having a few hours on that first day gives you a chance to acclimatize, and it gets you in the sort of shooting mode. But then also you can go back and look at your images, be it on your LCD or on a portable storage or a laptop if you have one. And then you can see the sort of mistakes that you were making on the first day, and keep that in mind on the following day. Now, the Friday, the 29th of January, we will get up and have an early breakfast, and we'll head off to the Monkey Park again. The thing that we need to note is that we will go in our own bus, we're chartering a bus, but the Monkey Park itself is about a 30-minute walk across. It's a very, there's no sort of ups and downs, but it's about a 30-minute walk on a very narrow path through the, on that sort of cut out on the side of a mountain, or again the valley wall. And so, you know, we will know what we need. We won't need to take everything that we would normally take, say if we're in Hokkaido. But you know, we'll take what we need so that we don't get too tired. But then it's a good 30-minute walk, and then we'll get there sort of, you know, not long after the place opens. And we'll shoot for the whole day. We'll take a packed lunch in the rest house. There's a little place where you'd leave the hot spa where the monkeys are and go into a place with doors on. Because if you take food out while the monkeys are around, they'll attack you. They're generally incredibly patient. You know, I mean, you can literally, I don't like seeing this done, but you can literally stick your camera right in the face and they just ignore you. But if you take food out, then they'll have a go at you. So you know, you have to go somewhere else for that. But then we'll go straight back, and this can be staggered. You know, we don't need to all go and eat together. We'll play it by ear. But however, you know, there'll be a packed lunch that we'll all eat in that sort of hut thing, and then go back and we'll shoot until the monkeys leave. As I say, at about 3 or 4 p.m. Now, the last day, the Friday, sorry, the Saturday, the 30th, is an insurance day. And what we'll do is, you know, depending on if, say, there was no, there was something that kept us from shooting on the first day, or if the weather was just so bad. I mean, and this is pretty much unlikely, because even if it's really snowing, it's good to be photographing in. Rain is not very likely, but possible. But say something happens and we just feel that we haven't got the shots that we want, or people are really, they just say, okay, no, I've got to go back. Then we do have an opportunity to go back on the Saturday morning. The reason that this is an option is because, you know, obviously, as I say, it's insurance, but also Saturdays, and this is another reason why I've timed it the way I have, you'll get a lot more people there. It's a day off, it's a holiday, and so the place will be packed. Like I say, this is why I've made it so that we'll be in the area on weekdays, because it's less likely to be as packed. But on a Saturday, there'll be a lot more people there. And, you know, we could consider not even going back if we're all happy that we've got we've bagged what we wanted to be, wanted to get. Now, if we don't do that, we can definitely take a detour to see some scenery on the last day. But then the plan is to start driving back to Tokyo by around noon. And so, you know, we'll be back around 5 p.m. And then after that, people generally will disband for a day and a half. People will be able to go to their hotels, and then spend Saturday evening, go out for some fun, you know, have a drink or whatever. And then Sunday can do a bit of sightseeing. And then we'll actually meet up again very early on Monday morning to go to Hokkaido. So again, you know, the reasons I've done this is because, A, I want people to be able to get the best shooting experience in Nagano with the snow monkeys. So a weekday or weekdays were definitely better. And then also it gives people a chance to sort of wind down between the two trips and see a bit of Tokyo. If people need, I will definitely help. I'll suggest some hotels that they could book into. And then, you know, we can maybe make that so that there are hotels at the airport, because we're going to Haneda Airport on Monday morning. And that means that, you know, people, if they want to stop at Haneda Airport, then they're right there for the trip. But it's not far by trains, local trains from the city either. So, you know, I can definitely help by suggesting somewhere to stay, and even help with the booking of that day and a half. It's not the Saturday and Sunday nights are not included in the cost of the trip. So, you know, that really is up to you to pay for all of that. But I can definitely help with the arrangements. Now, Monday morning is February the 1st. We're going to be off to Hokkaido. We'll meet nice and early. I think we meet at sort of, I think it was 6 o'clock sharp on the Monday morning. But that, I'll send these details out before we go. And then we fly to, Kushiro Airport. And from there, we have a 40-minute drive or so to the first location. And we'll start to photograph the Red Crown cranes. Now, the thing is here, we're generally going to be spending the whole day. We'll arrive mid-morning-ish after the flight, and we'll spend the whole day shooting cranes, but we will be moving to different locations. And again, these all depend on the weather. If it's a clear day, we go one place. If it's not such a clear day, we'll go to another place. There's a lot of things that I'll sort of have to decide dynamically. But basically, we'll be heading on to the village of Tsurui by the end of the day. And we'll spend the first day and the second day in a lovely hotel owned by a professional photographer called Wada-san. And this is the Hotel Taito. And then basically what we'll do is the following morning, we'll get up early. This is Feb 2nd, and we'll go and photograph the cranes from the bridge over the river. And this is Otowa Bridge. It's basically a road bridge, but also there's a second bridge that's just for photographers, which is very nice of them, I thought. But if you remember the images, you know, if this place gets if we go to lower than minus 15 degrees Celsius, we'll get mist on the river, frost in the trees, and it's just idyllic. So, you know, keeping our fingers crossed for that. We'll then go back to the Hotel Taito for breakfast, but then we'll go off to the place that we were at the day before for more cranes during the day, and then sort of repeat of the first day, but it really just gives us a chance to really bag that shot. So because, you know, the cranes, depending on where you're standing, they do things. You need time to get them. You need to become accustomed to how they do things. And so we really decided that we just wanted a good full 2 days at them this year. Next year, instead of the 1 day that we had this year. Following morning, as I say, this is Feb 2nd, we'll be off to the bridge again. And then we'll go either back to the Ito Crane Sanctuary, which is one of the places that we're thinking of going to. Or, you know, we could, if we're all happy, you know, we could also consider going off to shoot the Hooper Swans at Kushiro Lake a little bit earlier. But no matter what, we will probably head over there by around noon. And then on that night, we stay in a place called the Kushiro Prince Hotel. By the way, not all of the pages are in English, but there are links to all of the hotels in the itinerary as well. So if you click the hotel name, it'll take you, you can go and have a look at the hotel and what they have there and things like that. On the 4th of February, the Thursday, we will go to Bihoro Pass, and this is one of the only real sort of landscape shoots that we do in the first leg of the Hokkaido tour. That's a beautiful place. After that, we go back to the hotel for breakfast, and then we start a long drive to Daosu, which is a port on the Shiritoko Peninsula. And you know, this is basically, it's one of those sort of rest drives. If we see something nice on the way, we can definitely stop a couple of times, depending on, you know, on time itself. But generally, this is one of those rest drives. And if there's nothing exciting to shoot, we'll just take a straight drive through to Laosu. And then in the afternoon, we'll look along. There'll be probably eagles in the trees. Might get some insurance shots there. We did that this year as well. They're not great. But if we couldn't get out on the boat on the following day, then there'll be, at least you'd go back with something that you could, you know, you'd have some eagle shots. We stay in the Laosu Daiichi Hotel on the Thursday night. And then on the Friday morning, February 5th, we are hopefully going to be going out on a chartered boat out into the ice floe and shoot images like the ones we got this year. There's the big Stella's seagulls, and there's the white-tailed eagles. They're huge. The white-tailed eagle is a few centimeters wingspan less, but that's about it. They're huge, big birds. And, you know, there's quite a lot of them. We bait them slightly so that they do come to where we are, but not overly, so there's not a huge flock. Again, take a look at the images that I've posted as examples through the thumbnails on the right. Or go back and listen to the episodes. Actually, let me just check when they were. Under the section, the details section, where it says where will we go and what will we see, I mentioned that it's episodes 178, 79, 182, 183, and 184, literally just a month or so ago, of this the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Basically, in those five episodes, I took you through the 2008 tour, nine-day tour that we did this year. So if you want to sort of look at that, I do show a lot of listen to that as well as look. I do show a lot of example images, but you can click through some on the mbpworkshops.com website as well. So let's go back down to the itinerary. Where were we? So Feb 5th, we're shooting the eagles from the boat. And then after that, this may be a dawn shoot and it may be a morning shoot, depending on the conditions. Again, depending on the conditions, it may be no shoot. So, you know, this is one of the things. It's part of the disclaimer. I can't be held responsible for anything that we can't do. In the 2008 trip, this was not possible because weather conditions just didn't allow it. So obviously in the 2009 trip, 2010 trip, sorry, I want to make it happen. If it doesn't happen, then, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. But, you know, we found that the trip was still great in 2008, even without it. But it was one of the highlights of 2009, so I'm really hoping that we can get out and do that again in 2010. In the afternoon, we will Actually, oh no, that is this afternoon. So yeah, once we've done that, we start to take a drive around the other side of the peninsula to a town called Utoro, and from there we shoot the sea ice, the ice flow that will possibly be there. And this is basically the ice flow that comes down the Sea of Ohotsk, and it sort of comes up onto to the shore, right, you know, fills the sea a lot of the time on the Utoro side. And this is the same ice flow that we often hope that goes around to the other side of the peninsula and give the eagles something to sit on and eat, because that's why we're over to the other side in Laos for the eagle shoot. It really all depends on whether that ice flow comes around the tip of the peninsula or not, whether that happened. So anyway, on on February the 5th, the Friday, we stay in the Shiretoko Daiichi Hotel, another great hotel. And this is the place with the Viking boat in the banquet hall. And then the following morning, hang on, I've got to tell you as well. After the ice flow on the Friday, we will shoot a place called Oshin Koshin Falls. And then there's some rocks in the sea that you might remember from the episodes I did on this, out there on the Sea of Ohotsk. And it's a really nice place to just sort of spend an afternoon. We might get a sunset. The following day, on the Saturday, February the 5th, 6th, sorry, we have a little bit of a lie-in. We don't get up for a dawn shoot on this day, but we will get up relatively early and then leave after an early breakfast to go into the Shiretoko National Park. And we're hoping there to shoot some Ezo deer. Ezo, by the way, just means Hokkaido. It's a lot of the wildlife here is specific to Hokkaido. And one of the old Japanese words for Hokkaido is Ezo. And so that's basically attached to the name of many of the animals that you see there. We will almost definitely see deer. We may see fox. We may have already seen fox during the week as well. But then we'll have a walk through the park. And after that, really, that's really the end of the first leg. What we do then is, if there are any people that are only there for the first leg, we'll drop them off at the airport, Memanbetsu Airport, and they'll fly back to Haneda Airport in Tokyo from there. After that, we then take a relatively steady drive over to a place called Onryu, and this is in between the eastern side, where, you know, with Shiretoko, that we've spent the first half of the trip, and the central part of Hokkaido, where we spend the last 4 days. And so, you know, this is a nice hotel again. You know, we'll spend have a relaxing evening. By this time, people are generally ready for a bit of a relax as well. And so, you know, we'll basically, we do have an option to do some shooting around the hotel. This year, the weather was pretty foul and we were all tired, so we didn't. But if the weather's nice, or if it's even if it's foul, but we're all up to it, we can shoot. There's a nice river runs by the side of the hotel with some nice winter scenes, so we can shoot there as well. The next day, we will have again an optional dawn shoot. Really, sort of this middle day is, or the middle 2 days here, the end of the Saturday the 5th, 6th, sorry, and Sunday the 7th. Are really about getting across to the middle central area of the island. So we can have an optional dawn shoot if everyone's up to it. Not everybody needs to go. I'll be there if anyone else wants to. Then after breakfast, though, we'll take a long drive over to Mount Asahi, which is the highest peak in the Taisetsuzan National Park. And we'll stop in a hotel very close to the, they call it a ropeway in Japanese. It's like a cable car, a big cable car that goes up the side of the mountain. We will, depending on the weather, on that afternoon, we'll go up the cable car and shoot at the top of the mountain. If not, we'll be shooting around the area at the bottom of the ski slopes there, which was it was a pretty nice thing to shoot in the 2009 tour. On the Monday, the February the 8th, we will go and we'll be back out at dawn, shooting around the bottom of the cable car again. And again, it really depends on the conditions, but you know, we will definitely, you know, if conditions are good, then after breakfast, we'll go back for breakfast. Then after that, we will get on the cable car and go up to the top of the mountain, shooting the scenes up there. And if it is clear, it really is one of those winter wonderland sort of scenes. So, you know, let's hope that that works out. And then by around noon, we'll make our way down and we'll take a steady drive over to BA. And that's one of the places we've got the rolling mountains with the snow-covered hills, I should say. But then there's also the distant mountains. We can see Mount Asahi from the BA area and the Tokachi Mountains, as well as just like, you know, Tokachi Mountain Range. So that's a beautiful place to shoot in. And we really, you know, that is one of the main areas that we'll spend for the landscape leg. On the morning of the Tuesday the 9th, we will shoot the blue waterfalls that are right next to the hotel in which we'll be staying. That is called the Shirogane Park Hills Hotel, by the way. And we will, you know, after that, we'll take, you know, going around the BA area, we'll probably on the Tuesday, the February the 9th, we will go over to the Tokachi area and shoot the from the mountains, that place that I called heaven on earth, with the blue sky, nice clouds, and then just an amazing vista, winter vista. If we have any conditions like that again next year, then I'll be happy. Hopefully everyone else will as well. But generally, that is where we'll go after breakfast on the Tuesday. And then in the afternoon, we'll visit the Takushinkan, which is the gallery of the famous BA photographer Shinzo Maeda. That's one of those things, again, I said in the earlier episodes when I covered this, where people saw it on the itinerary, didn't think it was going to be that good, but were very impressed when we got there. It's just really nice to see how people are depicting the area. And Shinzo Maeda really is the person that opened up BA to photography. He was the person that he quit his job in Tokyo, moved up there, and until he passed away, made his life work photographing the area. So it's really nice to see that. But then there's a lot of photo opportunities around that, the Takushinkan gallery, as we saw in the episodes when I covered that. This is, you know, we'll shoot that, maybe a sunset in BA area again. We've got the trees around there. And then we go back to the Shirogane Park Hills Hotel. We actually have two nights in the same hotel there. So that's nice. It means we don't have to uproot on the morning of this day. And then the last day, we'll have, again, an optional dawn shoot. We might go back out to the falls if people don't think that they didn't get it right the first time. Or, you know, we could maybe try and do a sunrise. This is one of those optional ones again. People are generally getting pretty tired now. We've been on the road for 10 days. So these things we'll discuss on the previous night and plan dynamically. Then we'll go into the BA area again, possibly to Furano, and we'll have the Tokachi Mountain Range in the background in there. And generally, we'll just be continuing to work on landscapes. But then this last day, you know, we actually head back a little bit earlier than we did in 2009. It was a long day, and after the trip, we found that, you know, it was pretty tough taking the evening flight back. So we're actually going to come back on the mid-afternoon flight. And that really concludes the landscape portion, but also the tour. You know, I'm saying 9 days. It's 10 days. It's 10 days by the time you get back, but it's actually 9.5 days actually in the field. But that's it. That's a little bit long-winded, but that's a general sort of rundown of what we'll see. So you know what, I've got the what should I bring thing here. Let's just go through this. I've been through this in the last previous, you know, years for the same sort of thing. I definitely would suggest that you go over and read this for yourself, but you know, you'll generally want an SLR camera. You could get by with a high-end compact digital camera, especially one with a long zoom on it. But, you know, if they've got any shutter lag that will, you know, cost you shots, I would definitely say you'd be better off with an SLR camera. But, you know, if all you have is a compact digital, you could probably get away with it. If possible, you'll want a second SLR body, and that's so that you can have a long telephoto on one and then a medium telephoto, or maybe even a standard zoom on the second, so that you can catch the birds as they fly overhead and things like that. You know, for wildlife photography, having two cameras is definitely going to be a big help. Telephoto lenses, you're going to want no shorter than a 200mm. And if you only have a 200mm, you'll want a 1.4 extender for it. If you have a 70 to 300 or anything up to 300, that's going to be more like it. And if you have a 400 or a 500 or a 600 even, you bring it. It's definitely the place that you'll use those lenses. No matter what, I would suggest a 1.4 teleconverter or extender, as Canon call them. Like I say, especially if you have a 200mm lens, if that's your longest lens, you'll definitely want an extender. You'll also want standard lenses, like 70 to 200 is nice, and then a 24 to 105 or 24 to 70 works. And then, you know, especially if you're going to be going on to the landscape work, then you'll want a wide angle lens as well. I'd say, you know, for macro lenses, I'd say that there will be opportunities like snow close up and things like that. But if weight's going to be an issue, and it usually is, don't worry about taking a macro lens. And if you thought that you might need it, maybe a 25mm extension tube, or a 25 and a 12 extension tube, not extender, but extension tubes, will give your standard zoom enough reach, you know, enough macro capability to be a good sort of substitute. So a couple of extension tubes would perhaps help if you were worried about that. You'll want a sturdy tripod, something good and big. You want it to be probably a foot or so taller than your eye level if possible, because the legs will stink in the snow. They'll sink in the snow. You want a cable release or a remote timer switch for the landscape work. And you might be able to use a 2-second timer if you don't have one. But if you've got a switch, then bring it. You'll want a polarizer, possibly, not for the wildlife work, but more for the landscape work. You want spare batteries, and I would say bring at least twice the number of batteries if your camera is newer than, if it was released after 2008 or so, then batteries are definitely getting better. But you'll need three times the number of batteries that you would normally use if your camera is older than 2008 or so. The cold literally robs the power from them, and you'll find you'll use more batteries, and also you'll be shooting more than you've ever done. You know, I'm pretty much sure of that, because there's a lot to shoot and they're long days. So, you know, try to bring as many batteries as you can. Also, memory. Take at least three times what you'd normally use for a day. If you're a wildlife shooter already, you'll probably know, but you know, you do shoot a lot when you're shooting birds and things. So I would try to bring probably at least three times what you'd normally do. And if you're going to come for the full 12 days, you'll want probably, 3 weeks worth of film, not just two. But I would say even 4 weeks worth of film would be better, just because, you know, you can't really buy it out in Hokkaido. So bring as much as you possibly can. Also, you'll want, if possible, some sort of a portable storage or a laptop with a backup drive or something to offload your cards onto. You don't want to be trying to keep the whole trip on just one set of cards. It probably would work out more expensive, and B, it's just risky. If you drop your card pouch or something, you'd be in a mess. So you really want to have some way of making a second backup when you're out on the trip on the road. You'll want a small sort of LED flashlight, or a headlight, one of those things that you put around your head. And these things are really necessary for where we're out pre-dawn, and we're going to be, struggling to see your gear without that. So some sort of a flashlight is good. Also, you know, just a sort of quick note is that it can be very, very cold. It can be quite mild. You know, sometimes it's positively balmy, but you know, it goes from freezing point, which is about 32 degrees Fahrenheit, to as low as minus 30 degrees centigrade, which is 22 degrees Fahrenheit, in the early morning shoots. So, you know, you really want to be, make sure that your gear is going to be relatively protected. I find that the cold doesn't really, mess with equipment as much as people think. But if it snows a lot, then you're probably going to want to drape a towel or something over your equipment, or you're going to need to have a cover or something, whatever you're comfortable with. I personally don't use a cover. I use a towel and drape it over the top. Large handkerchiefs and things will do the job as well, and you can basically find that you can just waft the snow off, flick the snow off then. And if you've got a couple of those, if they really do get drenched through, then you can just change them through the day. You're going to want a camera bag that fits all of your gear in, because to stop the condensation forming, you're going to want that gear to be in the bag before you go into the warm from a cold day. You'll want a couple of big plastic bags, and what that's for is, often we leave the camera bag on the bus and just take out what we need for a certain part of the shoot, and then because the bag's not with you, when you come back on the bus, it can be a little bit warm, and so you're going to want to put your gear in a plastic bag and sort of tie it up so that you don't get condensation on your gear when you come into the warm. And that's basically just a second option for stopping condensation. You'll want some rubber bands to sort of tie the bags up, and also if the weather really is harsh and you're worried about your gear, you can also use that. Put your camera in a bag and then use a rubber band to secure the bag around the lens. Let's see, I said about the towel. Some kind of taping or foam padding on at least one of your tripod legs is also handy, because they get pretty cold and your hands can stick to them in the extreme cold. Most tripod manufacturers make one of these like foam padded legs. You've got a number of options there. So that's all about your gear. But for yourself, you're going to want some good thermal underwear. We call them long johns in the UK, and I heard some people on Twip laughing about this recently. So I probably should just put a little bit of a disclaimer in there that I can't think of a better way to say it. But long thermal underpants if you're in the US, under trousers, whatever. And also a long sleeve thermal, long sleeve thermal shirts, undershirts are good. And then you'll want some sort of a quilted trousers, like the ones that you use for skiing, but not loud colours. Blacks or even whites would be good, but you don't really want them to be like bright red and things like that. Also, you'll be better off if they're waterproof or at least sort of spray proof, because if the snow starts to melt, it could be uncomfortable if they were totally non-waterproof. You'll want a down jacket or a waterproof jacket that's preferably Gore-Tex or similar. And that will, if it's not a down jacket, you'll want a thick, warm fleece underneath that. I find that some sort of thin fleeces or mid-shirts also are useful. And, if you have an undershirt and then a normal sort of a thin fleece and a bigger one on the top and then a waterproof outer shell, then that's usually fine for even the coldest of the weather. And also, if you're using multi-layers, then you can take off a layer much more easily, than if you're wearing stuff that's just one layer that's really, really warm. Common sense. If you're used to working in the cold, then you'll probably know all about this. If not, if you are worried about these things, just ask when you're when you're doing your planning, and I'll try and give as much advice as possible. You'll want thermal boots, normal hiking boots don't work that well. You'll want, some good big thermal boots. I think mine are rated down to minus 70 degrees Celsius. Minus 30 or 40 would be fine. You'll also want something that is ideally, it's got a good sole on it for walking in snow and ice. And you'll also want some thick, warm socks. These are usually hiking, big winter hiking socks are good. You'll also want a warm hat or a hood on your jacket, something to cover your head and your ears when the wind's blowing. Some thermal gloves. I would often say, you know, some either some very thin gloves or some nice warm gloves, but have the fingertips sort of cut out on them, or ones that you can flip back, so that that gives you a little bit of dexterity. You can operate your camera and that with those. And also sometimes if you do feel the cold, you might want a second larger pair of overgloves or mittens, which would go over your first pair. And at the times when you really feel as though, you know, say we're just standing around waiting for something to happen, you know, you might want a little bit of extra protection there. And also, like I say, I mean, I've mentioned here again, polar fleeces. If you have a 3 or 4 fleeces that you can bring with you, we very rarely will be in a place long enough for you to do any washing. And, you know, as the group grows, most hotels will have one washing machine or two. So you could do some, but, you know, as the group grows, if everyone starts to try to do that, then you might be in a mess. So try and bring sort of 3 or 4 good polar fleeces if you can as well. So I go on to mention the thin fleeces here. I've already mentioned that. Hand warmers and foot warmers. I actually will send a couple of boxes of the chemical foot warmers, and, you know, the ones that go in your boots and ones for your hands. I'll send those on, and we'll have those on the bus for people to grab whenever they need them. If you want to use the solid fuel, the hand warmers that burn solid fuel, I use those, and they are good. They're, you know, pretty warm. The thing is, you know, bring them along, but if you need the solid fuel, you won't be able to take it on the plane. It'll be confiscated from you. So if you need solid fuel, and I can get it here in Japan, then I will, I can source that for you and then send it on, and it'll save you getting it confiscated and having nothing to burn. So let me know if you need that. Also, if you're prone to seasickness, see your doctor or ask a qualified chemist or whatever for advice on what seasickness medication to use. And just bring that. It's just basically for the morning that we go out on the boat shooting the eagles. I can't provide that, of course. It wouldn't be wise for me to be handing out medication. So if you're worried about that, bring your own. But to be honest, you know, we're usually that excited that no one gets a chance to get seasick. But if you are worried, bring your own medication. So finally, the all important stuff. How much does all of this cost? So I've actually, you know, I'm banking on larger numbers this year. So I've actually shaved off a few of the costs here and there. You know, some things do seem a little bit more expensive because we've got an extra day in and things like that. But I'll run through the package. All of the prices are in yen, but basically, you know, an average of 100 yen per dollar is what you pay. So, you know, I'll mention both, but use the dollar amount as a guideline. So the full package, which is the 3-day trip out to Nagano to shoot the snow monkeys, and the 10-day wildlife and landscape tour in Hokkaido, which is 11 nights in hotels. All of that, including the chartered bus in both locations, flights to and from Hokkaido, all meals and everything, all of the trips, they basically have all of the meals and accommodation, travel, everything all included. The full 3-tour package is 495,000 yen, and that's about $4,950. And you're actually with this, I said before that, you know, it's a little bit cheaper if you do these in packages, and you're actually saving $550 off the individual prices here. The wildlife package with the snow monkeys and the wildlife in Hokkaido, without, you know, not going on to the landscape package, is 353,000 yen, and that's about $3,530. Again, here you're saving a little. It's $170 off the individual price tour. The Hokkaido wildlife and Hokkaido landscape tours, so basically you don't go on the snow monkey shoot, that's a 10-day tour, and that is 410,000 yen, which is about $4,100. And this actually includes one more night in a hotel than the individual tours. And you get a little bit of more relaxation and that as well. There's a little bit of additional shooting. And this, that's really despite it being $400 cheaper than the individual tours. So, you know, put together that is, of course. So, yeah, good deal there. You can go on any of the tours individually. If you wanted to go just on the Snow Monkeys tour, that's 100,000 yen, which is about $1,000. The 5.5-day wildlife tour, because you know you won't get any shooting at the end of the the 6th day. The first leg of the Hokkaido tour is 270,000 yen, and that's $2,700. And then the landscape leg of the Hokkaido trip is 180,000 yen, and that's about $1,800. So, just to, you know, what's included in the package, basically we have a chartered bus driver, a chartered bus with a professional driver, that will take us around both the snow, this for the Snow Monkeys and the Hokkaido, different company, of course. But, you know, basically it's all, we have our own, the transport, for the Nagano thing, we'll spend 2 nights in a traditional Japanese inn called a ryokan. They have lots of hot spring baths and things and really nice traditional Japanese food. For the Hokkaido trip, we will also have, we include the flight to Hokkaido from Haneda Airport. If you need, actually, you know, say if you wanted to join but you lived in Hokkaido, for instance, or you wanted to make your own way up there, then, you know, we could arrange to meet at the airport, and you, and I would obviously knock the cost off the flights off for you, things like that. So if you want anything that's not covered here, just let me know and we'll figure out the price, and I'll send you an invoice, you know, separately. Basically though, you know, chartered buses, all entrance fees for planned things like getting into the monkey park in Nagano, or the cost of going out on the boat, or to get into some of the crane centers and things in Hokkaido. All of this, all meals, hotels, everything is all included. So basically, once we pick you up, you don't have to pay for anything until we drop you off again at the end of the trip. But what there are a few things that are not included that we should just mention. Obviously, if you're coming to Japan from outside of Japan for the trip, then excuse me, your flights to and from Japan are not included. Any travel that you do to get to the meeting points, you know, you may have train travel or taxis and things, that's not included. Also, if you do join the Snow Monkeys and the Hokkaido tours, as I said, the cost of the hotels on the Saturday and the Sunday night are not included either. But basically, like I said, everything else, once you're with us, that's pretty much it. There is one other thing. Actually, there's a couple of things, sorry. So travel insurance, I can't take out travel insurance for you, even as the organizer of the tour. So, you know, you'll have to make sure that you have travel insurance, and also make sure that your gear is fully covered. And if you have domestic insurance, it might not cover international, you know, travel. So make sure that you are fully, a lot of insurance companies will allow you to add international for a short period at a nominal fee. So just make sure that your gear is insured as well. Beverages. If we have any drinks with meals and that at night or stuff like that, then generally that's not included as well. I did buy 2 rounds of drinks in the 2009 tour, but we also took it in turns with a number of other people buying on other nights, and that generally tends to be what happens. But it's not included of the trip. All meals, everything else is. Also, if we decide to go to a facility or something that, you know, like an ad hoc sort of visit to something, if it's not a lot of money, then generally I'll pay for that. But if everyone agreed and we wanted to go somewhere that cost a little bit of money, then we may have to take some for that. But generally, everything that's planned is included. So reservation, how do you reserve your space? For each individual tour, if you were to go on just one individual of the individual tours, then you have to reserve your space by paying a reservation fee of 30,000 yen, which is about $300 per person. And that's for any individual tour. If you go on any of the packages, be it a 2 or 3 tour package, you have to pay a deposit of 50,000 yen, which is about $500, to secure your place. The remaining balance is going to be due no later than November 28th, 2009. Once you decide which package or workshop that you want to attend, you'll have to read the disclaimer on the bottom of the website. Generally stuff that we've already talked about. But read that, and if you agree, there are buttons at the bottom of the page. Basically, you can pay either the deposit for any one of the legs or packages, or you can actually pay in full. But you know, the deposit is enough to get you on to secure your place. Once you've done that, I will send you a PayPal invoice where you can you'll pay the remainder, the balance, by November 28th. But you know, just the deposit is enough to secure your space. The cancellation policy I've added this year, basically, if you cancel your reservation within 30 days of payment, but no later than November 28th, then I'll deposit your refund in full. If you cancel in writing after the 30 days and no later than November 28th, I'll refund your deposit. Before, no later than November 28th, then I'll refund your deposit, but I'll remove 10,000 yen or $100 to cover the transaction costs and things like that. If you cancel after November 28th, 2009, your deposit is not refundable. If something came up after you'd paid the balance, then you know, if you cancel less than 2 weeks before the start of the tour, then you'll get less. Is that right? If you cancel before the 2 weeks before the start date, I'll basically refund 50% of the cost of your tours unless I can fill that space again. If we had, say, a cancellation list and we can make it work out, then I would basically refund all of everything but your deposit. But, you know, all of these details are there on the page. Take a look. It probably makes better sense than the way I've just said it. So there it is. There are payment buttons on the page. There are 12 spaces. We've actually sold a third already. So, you know, don't take too long making your mind up, but you know, come along if you are thinking about it and book your space, and we'll see you in Japan for either the Snow Monkeys and or the Hokkaido tour next year. And it really is going to be, you know, an amazing trip again. I'm looking forward to seeing anyone that signs up. And you know, that's really it. Again, it's been amazing seeing this thing grow. The first year was amazing. 5-day tour, and then a 9-day tour in 2009, and we're going on for a total of 12 days. For 2010, there's a lot of interest. People are really getting fired up about this, and that makes me happy, of course. And so, you know, like I say, if you're thinking of coming, make your mind up. Get over to the site and take a look. If you do want any more information to help you make your mind up, then either use the contact form on the site, or email me, as I say, at workshops@martinbaileyphotography.com, and I'll try and help you with any of the details anything that you need to know to help you make your mind up. So that's it. That's a long podcast. I was hoping to get through that quicker, but it just shows there's a lot to get through. There's a lot that we're doing, so. Hopefully it's been helpful, it will have at least made it easier than having to read the whole page if you're like me and you don't really like reading. There are other areas on the page that I didn't touch on, and as well the example images. If you want a little bit of incentive, go along and take a look there. also, like I said, you know, listen to the wrap up of the 2009 trip as well. That was pretty, you know, a lot of information in there, and we'll have a little bit more in the 2010 trip. Quick piece of housekeeping is that I've locked off, closed the assignment for April at the end of the month, and you know, we've just started voting. That was on humorous, and it turned out to be not very funny for me. I couldn't get anything. But we've also started the May assignment, and the theme for that is Nothing in Focus. And this, you know, it's basically, we're going to end up with a lot of abstract images, but also, you know, not being in focus could mean that, you know, you've focused away from any of the subjects in the scene. But also, you could have focused, but then wiggle your camera around a little bit as you make the exposure, so nothing is actually sharp. So it could be sort of interpreted either way. But it's another one of those fun ones. You know, have a play with it. And as usual, your assignment images can be uploaded until the end of the month, end of May, just about anywhere in the world. And then I'll lock the assignment gallery, and we'll start the voting process for that again. But that's it. I'm going to sign off for now. I know that I've forgot to say some things, and I can't remember what they are, and that's why I've forgotten them. But it's been long enough anyway, so I'll get off now, and we'll speak again next week. So you have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye bye. The Martin Bailey Photography Podcast is a proud member of the Photocast Network. Find this and other great photography podcasts at photocastnetwork.com.